The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum, and we're going to look at the ongoing crisis, the musical chairs, the swapping of chair people in RT, the Metrolink plans, the recommendations for legislation on assisted dying, and of course, International Women's Day. Joining me now, Senator Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil Senator, Labour TD for Dublin Fingal, Duncan Smith, Alice Leahy, Director of the Alice Leahy Trust, and Quisha Connolly, reporter here on News Talk. And let's start with International Women's Day. Alice, what do you make of it? I mean, is it significant or meaningful in this country?
I think we have lost sight of why it started originally. We were looking at the people in New York, the trade union movements were involved. All of that happened then, and I think we've forgotten about that all completely. I think it's about coffee mornings and fashion parades and influencers and all of that. And I think we still have women working in the sweatshops. I think we have women who are struggling, some in our own country. And Pat, can I just I say I'm delighted to be on the National Airways today to thank all the women who support us throughout this country and beyond, and many of them working hard in their kitchens and on the farms and in their offices. So we can't forget those people. And I think...
And as our women wear the fast fashion, which is made by people in sweatshops.
In sweatshops, it is. And they don't look at that at all. So I think, and I must say, I want to mention a woman who I greatly admire, who's often been on your programme. I used to get invited to some things years ago, and one was to International Women's Day in the Art Gallery. And who was I sitting beside but the wonderful Mary Cassidy? And we had the most wonderful conversation, a bit like what we're having now. And I want to remember her because she was a great friend and supporter. But I do think we need to ask ourselves, why are we celebrating it here without looking at the wider issues throughout the world?
It is international, not national.
It is international.
Women's Day. Quisha.
Well, sometimes, like even today, we're all saying Happy International Women's Day. And now we're not, you know, suffering in war-torn countries and things like that. But there is some kind of bandwagon jumping in different companies and things like that, that all of a sudden, oh, it's International Women's Day, what should we do? But I think it's kind of, people need to remember that it's, you know, women are here every day. And even for Mother's Day, I think Claudia Winkleman was saying that she doesn't want her kids giving her a cup of tea on Mother's Day. She wants it every day of the year. It shouldn't just be for a special.
She wants the dishwasher emptied every day.
Yeah,
not just
the same with, like, you know, it takes...
But I take a more kind of broad view about the plight of women in the world. And I'm thinking of, you know, genital mutilation in Africa. I'm thinking of girls who are deprived of education in Afghanistan. I'm thinking of what's happening in the Middle East, be it in Gaza or in Yemen or wherever there are war-torn tragedies going on. And women generally bear the brunt of all of these things.
Yeah, they...
Timmy.
Yeah, well, we see that in Gaza at the minute, that women and children are really the ones that are probably suffering most. And maybe we fail to recognise how far we have come here. My mother got married, she was a nurse, she got married in the mid-60s. And because she got married and she was working in a state role...
Out the door.
She had to give up her job. Mm. I have two daughters in college planning their own careers ahead. And when I mentioned that to them, they stare at me as if I'm some kind of a dinosaur. The thought that their granny could be forced out of work because she got married. So we've come a distance. But I really like the point that you make in reflecting on International Women's Day. How much more could we be doing in terms of, and Alice talked about the fast fashion and the fact that maybe there are many women in sweatshops in other parts of the world that are labouring to deliver that. Now, of course, others will counter and say, well, without that trade, they'd have nothing and their families would go hungry.
It's so there's an important source of income
for them.
Families,
so there's a wider debate that has to be had rather than just saying stop purchasing fast fashion, which would have a detrimental impact on their lives in the short to medium
Duncan?
Term.
Yeah, I was struck by what Alice said at the start. I agree that it's broadened out and there's a whole other voice to it now. But I do think our trade unions still use International Women's Day as a chance to re-energise their own ongoing campaigns for workers, particularly in care sectors, childcare sectors, real low paid that are very heavily gendered towards women that need we need to see improvement in terms of pay, in terms of conditions. So International Women's Day does serve a still serves a good, strong political purpose. But even for my own job in terms of politics, in terms of trying to encourage more women, more working class women to get into politics and using different tools to do that, is quotas a part of it? Will that tackle the difficulties that women have in terms of accessing the funding for getting into politics, the support? How do you tackle online hate and abuse? Again, heavily gendered. So it gives us pause to, you know, refocus on those issues in relation to
so
my own
job. Is not entirely done here.
Not entirely done at all.
The laws may change, but circumstances may not change.
Absolutely.
That's we'll talk about musical chairs at RTE. Alice. The new chair's a man.
He is, and he's a man in his 70s, and he's from Patrick Kavanagh's part of the country.
So all is good in the world.
So, well, I think he will be practical. I am very saddened by RTE, and this is International Women's Day, and we have two women. You know, I think Sean was doing a good job. I think why couldn't they get sit around the table and discuss things? But having left that aside, it's years I've been. It was on RTE for many times, and still do get opportunities. And there's some wonderful staff in RTE, some amazing staff who keep us informed, who work very hard. And I think it's very sad to see what's going on. Now, I think it is atrocious to see how things were run. I mean, we're a very small agency. We've a board meeting every month, we have a financial statement every month, and if we bought a bottle of water, it's the receipt is there for it. So I cannot understand how it was allowed to run like that. And I also want to mention Ryan Tuberty. I knew Ryan. I think he was a very decent man, and I think maybe without the pain and suffering he has gone through, maybe we wouldn't be seeing what else has been going on behind the scenes. I would like to wish the board members well. I don't know how. I always have a big concern about boards, because boards are filled up very often by people who are friends of friends or members of a political party or whatever. But the man who's taking over as chair seemed to, I've never met him, but he seems to have a good track record.
Yeah. And I hope ESB, of which he is chair,
ESB,
keeps itself out of controversy.
It does squeaky clean, and I've had huge admiration for the staff in the ESB. They've been very good to us over the years. So I would wish him well, but I would also hope that the staff out there don't become too demoralised.
Yeah, Duncan?
Yeah, look, staff demoralisation is a huge issue. Look, we need not only a functioning, trusted RTE, but, you know, a trusted media sector across all forms of media, given what we're getting through social media, the misinformation, the disinformation. I think RTE was actually beginning to get over the hump. I think the new Director General, I think, had instilled some confidence in the public. I think the former chair, Shuni Rahali, more or less had the confidence of the public. But I think the intervention now, the now infamous intervention of Minister Catherine Martin on prime time, I think was one of the sorriest aspects of this whole controversy, and really put the minister's own position in question. And I think that's twice now we've seen the minister drop the ball on this. One last summer when she brought into doubt equivocating on the payment of the licence fee, and we've seen the reports now. We've had €22 million drop in the licence fee. For a minister to say that, however unpopular a charge is, it's still the law. For ministers to say that, I think, was one strike. And then what happened last week, I think, was really, really bad. And
Jimmy,
I think the ministers lost confidence.
Yeah, I think we've debated what has happened in RTE ad nauseam now for 8 months. So I had hoped that we were reaching a point where we could start to rebuild, where the board would be reconstituted, and that Kevin Backhurst and others would be let on with their business. I think it was unfortunate that what has happened. I certainly think that Shuni Rahali had done a really good job. I've been watching this at committees now over the period of time. I think she was unfairly treated. I think that there is nothing you could disagree with in the statement that she issued. Unfortunately, we have to move on without Shuan. I think she steadied the ship, quite frankly, during a really turbulent time. I think herself and the minister clearly had a disagreement. In my mind, it was relatively minor. It wasn't a substantive issue. We all forget stuff. We are, you know, particularly minor things. And I'm sure to Shuan, the important thing was that the two people that needed to be moved on for the greater good of the organisation were moved on. They were treated fairly so that there wasn't ongoing court cases. Whether or not somebody else on the board knew was a minor detail, quite frankly.
Because especially there were when issues. We see that when people in the public service, not the semi-state service, part company with the HSE, for example, a massive payment is negotiated with the help of solicitors, And somehow that's okay.
Yeah.
But the other
and it drags
is
on.
Not normal business. Do you know what I mean? When you get rid of somebody who hasn't done anything wrong, there's no firing offence, no hanging offence. Yeah. If you want them out to restructure your organisation, you've got to settle with them.
You do, and I mean,
you're
laws,
turfing them out the door.
We're not like America. We have good labour laws where difference of opinion arise, you're not meeting the expectation of your chief executive or your chairman, you move on and you get some ways to do that.
If there's wrongdoing, obviously people go out the door.
Different story.
But if there's no wrongdoing and you want to get rid of
somebody. And to me, the biggest issue where I took issue with the minister, whom I have a lot of regard for, but where I took issue with her was she somehow had no confidence or couldn't express confidence in Shuni Ralik, who had come to the game to try to resolve the problems, but yet she was taking the position of members of the board who were around through all the difficulties ahead of Shuni Ralik. That didn't add up for me. But look, it has moved on. We need to get behind all concerned. We do need a public service broadcaster in RTE, but we do need also to support the wider public service media, both print and broadcast.
Yeah, and you've been saying this, in fairness,
I've been at this for quite some time.
Yeah.
10 odd years.
Quick.
I think, well, Orty, you just said it there to me that it's 8 months and it's kind of scandals and sub-scandals. And actually, the kind of scandal that was happening with Catherine Martin and Shuni Ralik around the exit payments, like that was actually another payment scandal as a result of a payment scandal. So I think the kind of intervention, the Public Accounts Committee saying that they want to see the Controller and Auditor General kind of brought back in to look at RTE, I think that's a really common sense thing. I think most members of the public would see that as very kind of, maybe it should have already been in place. Because definitely, I think as well, maybe RTE, because of the fact that they obviously have the licence fee and a public service remit.
And it puts auditors on their toes as well, because you have the auditors who the company employs to get the books in order and present them. If they know, and they will still have these auditors to prepare the books, if they know, those auditors, that they're going to be scrutinised in turn again by the CNAG, then they'll be pristine.
Yeah, and it was actually the Grant Thornton that noticed the kind of the anomaly or whatever it was with the kind of extra payments with the sponsorship. So it was those auditors externally that kind of blew the whistle and started this whole thing. So I think it will be a good thing to have that oversight.
All right. Now we'll move on to Metrolink. Now, Alice, you know, the new station at Charlemont Street won't be a million miles from where you live. So are you looking forward to trotting down to Charlemont Street, hopping on the Metrolink and making your way to Dublin Airport in jig time?
Well, I made up my mind when Charlie, my husband, died 2 years ago. I made up my mind I would never go to an airport again.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I said, never go to an airport again. Can't stand the hassle. Why should you put yourself through the trouble? Any holidays I'll have in the lovely west of Ireland.
So, in other words, you only went overseas for Charlie?
Well, no, but he packed the bag. He packed the bag. Well, I went overseas a lot, but a lot of my travelling abroad was camping and that sort of thing. Yeah. But the airport has changed and life is too short than to put up with the hassle. So I decided, no, I'll go...
Staycationing.
I'll stay here in Ireland. Now, I'm a walker. Now, I have issues around how safe it is walking on the streets. The footpaths, you could fall over them. People walking their dogs, they forget to pull them aside and you could trip over them.
They don't clean up the poo,
that is a huge problem. And I see that John Toomey, the former director of Garda Commissioner, has now been appointed to something about the dogs, but I don't know if it's about the dog poo.
I think it's dog attacks.
It is, and that is crucially important. But to get back to the Metro, if I were living on the line, I think I'd probably find it very useful. But if I were living on the line and I need to be compensated, there's a huge issue, I think, about the amount of money that people can be compensated for.
Yeah. Now, they jumped it from 45,000 to 75,000. This is in case structural damage is done to your house.
You can just imagine that.
But how do you put a house that half collapses together again for 75 grand?
But you couldn't. And it's very difficult. Now, I know they're talking about billions. Now, we live in a society where we no longer talk about pennies or 10 shilling notes. It's about billions. I think maybe we do need needed in the city, but I'm not an expert in transport, but I would be happy to have a bus service where you can get a seat, that you're able to walk around the city without a bicycle running into you or a dog tripping you up. I sound like a real golden oldie, but that's my reality in the city of Dublin.
All right. So look after the millions and the billions will take care of themselves, to borrow from an old expression. Duncan, more concerning, I suppose, we had on yesterday's programme the concerns of the Dartmouth Square Residents Association, a square that is listed. It's regarded as something that the city should cherish. They're afraid at least the west side will fall down. Yeah. And then you've got buildings that it looks like Transport Infrastructure Ireland did not know were there or had been replaced by other buildings. That's a bit worrying.
Well, I think the Dartmouth Square West houses aren't going to fall down. Because our country, despite what's said about it, have a really good record of big infrastructure projects. I remember as a teenager.
National Children's Hospital. Let's start there and work away.
Transport infrastructure projects. Lewis Cross City, our motorway infrastructure. I remember being a young teenager in my friend's home in Marino, pressing our ears to the floor to see if we could hear the tunnelling underneath. And at that time, if you go back, there was, you know, scaremongering that, you know, the wonderful historic city village of Marino would be damaged and the homes would be damaged. Like, we would be using, if this goes ahead, and I really hope it does, like, international expertise, exquisite engineering, the best in the world, to deliver a project that Dublin needs, not just North Dublin. Dublin needs this, and it's Metrolink. It will link in with every other piece of transport infrastructure, from Dart to Bus Connects. And Alice, you're absolutely right. Bus Connects is needed.
Bus Connects.
I'm
not against this, by the way. Yeah. I think we should have been digging in the ground a long time ago to build an underground earlier than we're now attempting to do it on a very developed city. Hmm. The worry I have is about the rigour that went into the design. If they didn't know that two buildings had dramatically changed on the route.
Where are you going?
And they say, we'll drop the tunnel by 5 metres or whatever to avoid the car park in the AerCap building. I mean, for God's sake, that's...
I've been at the oral hearings, which is fantastic, by the way. We're having 6 to 7 weeks of oral hearings. That's good, transparent planning process. I've been in for a number of days in the Gresham Hotel myself. I think Aidan Foley and the team in TII have been answering questions very well from concerned residents. And it's not just Dartmouth Square residents. I have residents in Soares, where I'm from, who are concerned, and all along the line. But look, Dublin, we have a congestion crisis. We're in the top 10 cities in the world for congestion. We have an air pollution, an air quality crisis. The bus service, we need a bus connects, we need an increased frequency of buses. But some critics of Metrolink have said, sure, we could just run a bus from the airport. If you were to try and replicate the capacity of Metrolink with a bus service from the airport, you'd be running 480 buses an hour, which is a third of the Dublin bus fleet through the tunnel.
I live close to the Dart line, and I look at the capacity of the Dart trains, and it's wonderful, because you'd need dozens of buses to deliver the capacity that the Dart delivers seamlessly every hour. But of course, the Dart has right of way, whereas the Lewis, as currently structured, does not. But undergrounds have the right of way. There's no traffic, to get in their way. That's why I like it. But it's the rigour of the planning and why everything takes a long question.
Well, I think I feel like this has been talking about this for so many years. And as Duncan said there, that, like, to try and get in. Now, I work early mornings, so I don't have to deal with traffic. But when I was commuting, it was just a nightmare trying to get across the city. So I think this... And hopefully as well, it would future-proof it. Like, I remember the port tunnel, that then the bigger trucks came in and then it wasn't suitable. So hopefully it will be future-proofed, that it will actually be able to serve the city.
But the rub is here, and I don't know, I presume, Timmy, you've been looking at this. The Metro was originally planned to go to Sandyford with the Green Line of the Lewis upgraded to Metro. But the problem with that is they'd have to shut it down for 3 years while they're doing it. And now we have come to depend on the Green Line capacity, so they can't shut it down. So our texter here says, that's why the Metrolink is now ending at Charlemagne Street. Too many politicians have been messing with the designs, looking for political kudos. We need to build the Metro, and not just a single line. We need a network. And that Charlemagne Street issue is really at the heart of it. Because it was supposed to be seamlessly turning on-street stuff into underground stuff. And now that's not being done.
I wouldn't disagree with your texter. I've sat on the Transport Committee for almost 23 years now, and I've seen the various different projects come and go, including Lewis, where Owen Ryan was then chair, and we almost every second week we had a different delegation in, upset about how it was going to impact on their lives, whether it was their homes or their businesses. And we'd had some good people at the time. Frank Allen, who was just recently retired as the chair of Inverurie Éireann, was the chief executive of the Rail Procurement Agency at the time. And Frank kept saying in a very sort of logical and from an engineering perspective, we'll get this right. It will be delivered. And it will meet the needs and expectations of people. And that's what has happened. I think we have to have a little bit of faith, notwithstanding some of the issues that are there, about what's the long-term vision here. I was in London the week before last, and I'm always amazed when you go down into the underground in London and just look at how old the infrastructure is, and yet how much it's part of life and how the city has grown and built around it.
Much of the London Underground. But here's the rub about that. The subsoil in London is easier to get through than what we have here. We presumably have a lot of granite.
But we have a lot more technology now today than they did when they were doing it back then. But they got it and it's right and it's there for that duration. So it's not about how we get through the next 6 months, the next 6 years. This is... for 100, 200 years forward. So we've got to think about the long-term benefits.
So, you know, when we do things, and the metro, the Lewis is a lovely thing to get when you get it, I mean, cross town or whatever. But the capacity of the Lewis is limited by its on-street activity, the width of O'Connell Bridge, the frequency you can use Lewis, the fact that it intersects with traffic lights. You know, it was flawed from the beginning because you can only get as many Lewis's on the line. It's determined by how many Lewis's you can get through Dublin City. Slowest part determines the capacity. And that was probably a mistake. Anyway, let's move on, only briefly, because it's something we're going to talk about again and again, I suspect. And that is assisted dying, Alice. The proposal that there will be legislation for that. What do you think?
I think it's disturbing. I think it's like so many issues in Irish life. We try and rush things through, and I think there needs to be a lot of discussion around this. And I think people need to be able to listen to maybe both sides of the story, because I think nursing is about helping people to live their life healthily. And if we look at the hospice movement, it's about helping people to end their life in comfort. But I think what
because it happens at the moment that people in terrible pain are given morphine.
They're given and
the side effect of morphine is that they die.
They die. But it's not the same, I think, as what we are hearing about now. I mean, I was looking at a woman on television last night, and I found it actually quite disturbing, because it was almost a sense of glee that we are now where we are. But I think this needs to be discussed very carefully, particularly at political level. And I think there is a danger. So many things in Irish life, for instance, I'm talking about the methadone in the drug area. This was meant to be short term, but now, as we know, it's gone on for years. So then if we set up, maybe we'll say a pilot project, that's not the right word, that will continue. So I think it's up to our politicians to kind of grasp the nettle and not be afraid to rock the boat and say what needs to be said.
In other words, we've got to be mature in our approach to this and take our time. Duncan?
Yeah, look, I mean, we haven't seen the report yet, but we know what the recommendations are going to be from the committee. They recommend legislation for assisted dying or euthanasia. I don't think we'll see this in the lifetime of this government. And I think when stuff goes through the Department of Health, if we look at something which would have had ethical and moral considerations, to use that terminology, like the Assisted Human Reproduction Bill, that has had a torturous
detail. We anticipate the same process.
And I think that's, you know, we do need a meaningful conversation and a proper, mature political debate about this.
Yeah, as Duncan says, that if, there was a lot of discussion at the committee, but if this is to be brought into law, it needs to go through Cabinet need to approve it.
There's no way it'll meet the deadline of this soil, Timmy Dooley, before it makes
it. Yeah, I think so. Look, as Duncan has said, there's medical, ethical and moral issues. And those of us that are within the bubble that are discussing this all the time kind of know where we stand on it. But I think there's a long road yet in terms of the public debate that will have had to be had to get people to a point where they're comfortable with whatever they decide to do. Yes, there are a lot of tough issues, tough cases that we're all familiar with, but people need to chat that through. And I think, you know, as we did with the Eighth Amendment, after a long and arduous process of discussion, the Irish people actually moved ahead of politicians.
But this one won't have to be taken by referendum. It will be legislation.
No, but I think when you try to do something that you're not involving people in the discussion, it would be foolhardy to rush it, because then people mightn't understand the full extent of why decisions are taken or are not taken. So there's a way to go here.
We will have to leave it there. My thanks to Senator Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil Senator, Duncan Smith, Labour TD for Dublin Fingal, Alice Leahy, Director of the Alice Leahy Trust, and Quisha Connolly, reporter with the News Talk. One inquiry about that documentary series we did on the Tusker Rock crash. Is it available? Well, it is available. You can find it via the News Talk website and YouTube. Just search for Tusker Rock News Talk and you will find that series. And that's all we've time for. Our items are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.